WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Perhaps because she reminds so many people of an aunt or a grandmother, Dr. Ruth Westheimer has been able to give frank sexual advice on radio, TV, as well as in her books. Her new book isn't about sex, it's about families and how they're changing. It's called The Value of Family. In answer to the people who warn that the American family is declining, she says it's just adapting. Dr. Ruth's own family was exterminated in the Holocaust. She grew up in Frankfurt, Germany. She was 10 when her synagogue was destroyed in 1938 during what became known as Kristallnacht. Shortly after, her parents sent her out of the country to safety. Dr. Ruth's own family experiences shaped her reaction to the family values debate.
I definitely know the value of family. Because I, at the age of 10, I was an only child. At the age of 10, my mother and grandmother, because my father had already been taken by the Nazis to a labor camp, put me on a train to Switzerland. And I thought this would be, and they thought it would be for 6 months. And out of the 6 months, the whole Kinder transport, the entire group of children who left Germany, stayed in Switzerland for 6 years, and it became not a children. It wasn't a children's home anymore. It became an orphanage. So for me, the word family has a tremendous amount of emotions attached to it. I know what it means to live without a family.
I'd like to hear a little bit more about your family. When after your mother put you on the train to Switzerland to get out of Nazi Germany, did she and your grandmother try to flee also?
It was too late already. It's a very good question, Terry. I was told I did not want to leave. I was an only child, rather spoiled, 13 dolls. And I did not want to leave. I was told that if I am not leaving, my father could not return from labor camp. So I had no choice.
You write that in the orphanage in Switzerland, that the message was drummed into all of you, never complain, you're lucky to be alive. Do you think that was a healthy attitude to have?
Today, from my vantage point of being an educator today, I would question that very much. However, my philosophy of life came from my early socialization. That was such a good one. The first 10 years of my life were in an Orthodox Jewish home. And in that way, I could survive. But if you ask me, was that pedagogically sound to tell children who have lost everything, who didn't have, in that children's home, never had money to even buy a bar of chocolate, even though we were in Switzerland, the country of chocolates. If you say to me that to then say to children you have to be grateful because you have a roof over your head and you are being fed, is a big problem. That could be the subject of another book of mine.
What's the problem?
The problem is that the educators were not educators. The people who were placed in charge of us were themselves refugees, themselves sent out, pushed out of Nazi Germany with all the anxieties, with all the uncertainties that that implies. So these were people who didn't know any better. I don't waste my time hating, because they did not know any better. And again here, fortunately, there were a few adults, one Swiss woman that is popping in my mind, Helen Haumesser, who, not Jewish, who was instrumental in giving us some friendship. There were other adults, and then mainly there were the children themselves who gave comfort to each other.
Dr. Ruth is my guest. She has a new book called The Value of Family. Now, your mother was actually pregnant with you before she and your father married.
Yes.
Was that considered shameful? Did they consider that shameful?
Absolutely. But you know what?
What?
That's why I wrote it in my autobiography. Somebody who read the draft said, why are you writing that your mother was pregnant with you, then your father married her, that you were pregnant with your daughter before you married her father?
I was going to bring that up in a second.
I know you already, Terry, so let me just tell you. And my answer to Ben Yagoda, my co-author now and my co-author on the autobiography, was, I'm not a saint. I want to show that what I talk about is some of the issues that I have experienced. And I want to show things happen in life.
Let me ask you how you found out about your mother being pregnant before marriage. Did she tell you that?
No, she never would have told me, ever, ever. And also I was 10 years old. I once looked at some documents after the war, many years later, when I started to do my master thesis. And lo and behold, I saw the marriage date, and I know when I was born. I said, aha, they loved each other. And they loved each other so well that here I am. And then they got married. Well, in Frankfurt of those years, that was considered, it is not like today. In even our country and in other countries, in the Frankfurt, in an Orthodox Jewish family of those days, that was considered a very big problem.
Did this seem really out of character to you when you found out that your mother had actually had sexual relations with your father before marriage?
On the one hand, yes, and on the other hand, my father was a very good-looking man. So that's all I can say about that. He was not only spirited and very intelligent, and I also know that my grandmother, who lived with us, my mother's father, who had a tremendous influence on me because she was a very smart, devoutly religious woman, I know that she was not happy about that because I do remember some fights. But in the days, I didn't know why there were fights. My mother was working in the household of her mother-in-law. So it wasn't just that he brought her home for one night.
Right, your mother worked as the house cleaner in your father's house.
The housemaid, absolutely, right. Absolutely.
I could see the potential for scandal here.
and then I became a housemaid in Switzerland. I have an official diploma of a housemaid.
Which you used, actually, when you first moved to America.
A dollar an hour, and I supported my little girl. But now, Terry, right away we have to say, when I do a book of the value of family, the important sentence now is to say, I am married now for 35 years with the same man, and I have two children. And Terry, I have two grandchildren. Nobody in the whole wide world has grandchildren like mine.
I've heard that before.
Nobody, Terry. A 6-year-old grandson and a 3-month-old granddaughter. And I have to say something to you. Seriously speaking, when I look at these grandchildren and I see them every single week, I say Hitler and the Nazis did not want me to have grandchildren. And look at this triumph.
People are always asking, why is it that people who aren't married, who aren't ready to have children, would risk having sexual relations without using birth control? I want to find out why you did that. You were pregnant before you were married. You hadn't intended on becoming pregnant. Mm-hmm. I assume you knew about birth
control. That's not
true.
But I was a little stupid by hoping that I wouldn't get pregnant. But basically, I already knew that I would marry the father of my daughter. Even so, afterwards, we separated. And I deep down said, oh my gosh, I'm 29 years old. I'm only 4'7". Maybe I will never have a child. So deep down, I do remember that I wanted that pregnancy. There is no question in my little mind that I can't tell you here on National Public Radio how often during that month of June I did have sex. But guess what? My daughter is 39. I do remember it, but I won't tell you. So there is no question that I already knew this man is going to be the father of my daughter. I'm going to marry him. I did not know that once she was a year old, we would separate. That I did not know. I thought, like everybody thinks, this is going to work out. But you see, somehow things in life do work out. Because when I remarried, my husband adopted Miriam. I made sure that she always knew that she was adopted. So that there wouldn't be a neighbor saying, "Haha, I know that you were adopted." I told her that.
My guest is Dr. Ruth Westheimer. She has a new book called The Value of Family. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Ruth, and she has a new book called The Value of Family. Can I ask you how you learned the facts of life growing up in a home for children during World War II in Switzerland?
No, I knew already the facts of life because my parents had a book by Van der Velde, The Ideal Marriage. I remember exactly what it looked like, and it was hidden. And I was very short. I was even shorter than now. But I do remember that I took a chair, I climbed up, I knew in that bookcase where that book was, and that's where I read. I thought, oh my gosh, look where babies come from.
Were you shocked? Was it upsetting to you to find that
yes,
out?
Yes, and then it was a girlfriend who taught me about menstruation in the bushes, an older girl, also in Frankfurt. In the bushes, she told me about menstruation and actually showed me a sanitary napkin. Before I went to Switzerland, my mother and grandmother said, "We have to tell you some things before you go." I said, "Don't talk to me. I know it all." I didn't know it all, but that's what I thought. I knew it all.
From what you had learned about sexuality when you were young, what were your expectations? I mean, did you think that it was going to be something that was, like, extraordinary, something that was going to be frightening?
I fortunately already in Switzerland had that boyfriend, and we discovered wonderfully early in life about, not about sexual intercourse, but about kissing and hugging and necking and touching. So I knew there are some good things coming. I didn't know I would be Dr. Ruth Westheimer, the sex therapist. But I knew that there are some good things in store.
You learned the facts of life from a book that your parents had hidden. What about your children? Did you try to teach them about sexuality when they were young?
Absolutely. And when my children grew up, I didn't tell them the stories about a stork. I told them how babies are born.
How old were they when you decided they were ready to hear this?
I would say when they came home with questions. You see, what my philosophy is to be an askable parent, to make sure that the child knows that they can ask the parent. Sometimes children do not want to talk to their parents. Leave them alone. Put a book on the table. And that's exactly what I did.
You put a book on the table?
I did put a book on the table. I don't remember which book it was. And that's what I suggest for parents to do, to say, read it, take it into your room. If you have questions, ask me. And if they don't ask questions, to leave it alone. But we don't have the luxury not to do sex education.
You have absolutely no trouble at all talking about sexuality when it comes to, you know, quote, human sexuality or other people's problems. Mm-hmm. Has it always been that easy for you to talk about your own sexuality in your own marriage? And you don't have to tell me. I'm not asking to find out what goes on.
I know.
Is it comfortable to talk about that at home in addition to talking about it on television?
Of course not.
Okay.
That's why I never let my husband come to any of my lectures.
You don't let him come?
No. Because you know why?
Why?
I don't let him attend. Please, careful how I talk. I don't let him attend. You know why?
Why?
He would say to the whole audience, I just gave a lecture to 5,000 people at the American Association for Retired Persons. Two days ago, I was in Miami and gave a lecture to Hadassah. I don't let him attend because he would say to you, Terry, do not listen to her. It's all talk. So I managed, because I was already an older woman, to keep my family very nicely out of all of this limelight.
Do you find that the questions you're asked about sexual anxieties have changed a lot over the years? Or is it basically the same questions year after year?
That's a good point. The questions about sexuality have not changed. since I'm in that field, what has changed is the vocabulary. So a woman who does not have an orgasm would not say anymore, I don't have sexual satisfaction. She would often say, I don't have an orgasm. A man who is a premature ejaculator would be more specific. A man who has difficulties obtaining or maintaining an erection would be more specific with that question. The vocabulary, and I'm not the only one, since the New York Times can print the word penis, the vocabulary certainly has changed.
What would you say are the greatest misunderstandings that men have about women and women about men sexually?
I don't go into that. You know, many other people have written about all of this issue about language not being the same and the misconceptions. I don't divide it like this between men and women. I say we still have many people who are sexually illiterate. For example, who don't know men and women. Don't know that the arousal phase is longer for women, that the resolution phase after orgasm is longer for women. That's why they need to be hugged and kissed. But I do not do this kind of division that men don't know this and women don't know that. I'm saying everybody has to be sexually literate.
Dr. Ruth is my guest, and she has a new book called The Value of Family. You are best known for discussing sexuality.
Right.
And your new book is The Value of Family. It's about family values, your perspective on family values.
Yes.
Have you met with a lot of people who object to your discussions about sexuality and think that that's harmful to the family?
Look, there are some people, that's a very good question. There are some people who certainly say that sexual literacy and issues of sexuality should only be taught in the family. And to those people, if there are for religious values or for values of their own morality and ethics, I would say, please, parents, do it. There is no question. But for those parents who might not be able, make sure that the schools, the synagogues, the churches, the community centers, all the other parts of the experience of our lives, that they are going to get into this discussion. We have to have the discussion. And I tell you something, Terry. The reason I did this book is not necessarily because of the issue of the where sexuality should be discussed. I'm saying in this book, we need to have a discussion about the family. The family will change. I'm saying to politicians, move over and let people who are educators, because that's what I'm considering myself, talk about the need of looking at family structure differently. I want a tsar of the family in the White House. I don't want only a tsar of drugs and all of the negative things. What? I don't want to be that tsar because I'm not a politician. I'll be the consultant.
What would you like to see a family tsar do?
Fabulous question. I want that family tsar to caucus, to sit with everybody involved in family life, in children's welfare, in health, in making sure in health in terms of vaccinations. And then I want that person to have the ability to take all of this together and to say, enough talking. Stop all of this screaming about blaming. Let us educate towards that year 2000 in terms of family life. But I need that south of the family to have that power. I went with my daughter a few weeks ago, I'm sure you know about that, Terry, for the Stand for Children March. She took her two children. Her baby was 1 month old and my grandson almost six. I learned one thing coming out of Nazi Germany, since that's what we discussed in the beginning of this program. You must stand up and be counted for what you believe in.
Well, Dr. Ruth, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you very much.
Dr. Ruth Westheimer's new book is called The Value of Family. This is Fresh Air.